What up? It's the Crossover Pod. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. My colleague Chris Mannix is again off this week, but I did find a top shelf NBA podcaster to fill in. He's the host of Inside the Green Room. He also has three championship rings, which is a little more than me and Mannix combined. He is, of course, Danny Green of the Philadelphia 76ers. Big summer for Danny. He just signed a new two-year deal with the Sixers worth as much as $20 million. He just got married. I'd say he's had a pretty nice offseason. So yeah, plenty to discuss. His free agency, his decision to stay in Philly, and, Ben Simmons, of course. The thing that's looming over everything. Ben Simmons, his future, where the Sixers are going, a lot up in the air. Discuss that, and of course, a whole lot more. Danny's always a really thoughtful interview. Before we get to that, a reminder, please subscribe, rate, and review The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on YouTube if you'd like to actually see me and my guests yammering instead of just listening to us yammering. Go to YouTube, search Sports Illustrated Podcasts. That channel has this podcast, The Crossover, as well as our other NBA podcast, Open Floor Pod. Those guys do a great job. And all the other great SI podcasts are there. Go check it out. Okay, my conversation with Danny Green is coming up next, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, very pleased to be joined by a three-time NBA champion. I'm sure that title never gets old. Danny Green. Danny, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. Actually, it occurs to me, three-time NBA champion, but a fourth ring, because you just got married. Yeah, congratulations.
Not my real ring, but thank you, man. It was a time. You know, weddings are expensive, but well worth it. Yeah, they're a lot of fun. We enjoyed it very much. It'll be a memory that lasts forever. A lot of people show up and show love and support, and some of my teammates from different teams show up. But yeah, man, thank you. It was a great leap.
Yeah. Well, it made the rounds on social media. The videos leaked. Someone leaked. This looked like a tie. You mentioned, you know, expensive. I'm a little worried that your new Sixers contract is already spent based on what I saw on social media.
I told Daryl Morey, I told Doc when I had to sign the papers that I will not spend any more money for the rest of the year. For the contract, I'm done. The summer has, you know, spent me out. No more for the rest of the year. Listen, all just living expenses and what I need to make happen outside of that. No more spending on luxurious things or items or material things.
I'm sure somebody will hold you to that. Maybe you can get a loan from Joel Embiid or something to carry you through the season if necessary.
He did get a pretty nice extension, man. Shout out to him. Congrats to him. He did get a nice extension.
He did.
Yeah, I might have to ask Joe for a little help in the pockets so I can get something nice for myself this year. If we win. If we win, I'm sure he'll get a blessing or something.
Absolutely. I got to say, too, so I did check your IG. The craziest videos were somebody else's, but on yours, you posted about it. And obviously a very happy time, but you did have a hashtag that stood out, time to make babies. So it seems like this is going to be a very busy year for you on a number of fronts. Good luck with expanding the family. Kids are the best. I've got a daughter. She's now 15 and a half, and it seems like yesterday she was a baby. So relish every moment, my friend.
Awesome. 15 years of being a dad. That's awesome, man. So I'm looking forward to it. That's why we got married. Obviously, I love her. She's my partner. But we're ready to take the next step into the familyhood, into that life and that chapter. And, you know, hopefully kids will come, and hopefully they're as awesome as yours.
It's the best, man. All right, before we get all sappy and I start getting all teary like the sap that I am. So your other commitment that you made was two more years with the Sixers. This is like this was your third. I looked this up. Tell me if I'm wrong. I think this is your third true free agency since you broke into the league. 2010, you signed with the Spurs. Obviously, a pretty fortuitous signing at that time. You get traded to Toronto. Signed with the Lakers in 2019, and then Lakers trade you to Oklahoma, and then you get dealt again to Philly. So you haven't had that many opportunities, and this happens a lot for guys to truly just sit back and say, okay, where do I want to be? What is that about? Weighing all the different things that go into that, you're a 40% career three-point shooter. You're a 3-and-D guy in an era where that's critically important for like every contender or every playoff hopeful. It did seem like this wasn't the greatest market this summer, though. So tell me a little bit about just like, you know, and by the way, of course, you landed in a great spot. You're with a phenomenal franchise and a great team with two stars, one of whom's future is a little murky. But it did not seem like there was maybe as frothy of a market for Danny Green as I might have anticipated when it opened. How did you process it all, and how did you feel about it all?
Yeah, I agree with you, Howard. You know, before it started, I still have high expectations. I didn't have high expectations, but my expectations were a little different than seeing where the market was. I think for a lot of people, expectations lowered because there wasn't a lot out there. Said I haven't experienced many true free agencies. There was, said 2010, I went back to San Antonio. There was another one in San Antonio, but those two times I went back to San Antonio, I didn't really talk to any other teams. It just talked to them, and it happened so quickly. And got the deals done. There was very few, only two other times where I was after Toronto. I think I traded. That was the time where I actually talked to teams who were waiting on Kawhi to see where he was going. You know, and seeing teams that are interested. That was like my first true, introduction to free agency and how that process was. And then after that, into this year, we said the market is just different. Obviously, with COVID hitting, changed a lot of things. Teams, cap space, you know, the stars are getting paid, you know, big bucks now, even bigger bucks, but there's hard caps. And I guess a lot of people didn't predict that like a lot of teams wouldn't go over the cap anymore, you know, or wouldn't, you know, tap into it. And it's hard for certain middlemen or role players. I said the middle guys, a lot of superstars getting paid, or you're a vet minimum. And the in-between guys are kind of getting lost in the sauce, and it's hard for them to get paid unless they're signing trades. I know you talked to Harrison quite a bit. Harrison was with me during that process. He's very educated on what teams have space. Obviously, Raymond Brothers, my agent, but during that process, I was in Columbia on my bachelor weekend. So we were enjoying the weekend, and we got a chance to, you know, sit there and talk what teams had what, and then we seen where the cap space was, and it was just tough. It was a tough market. So, you know, I've had my thoughts on it, and said I'd never like to go into with high expectations, but I think my expectations were a little higher than where it landed, maybe. Not extremely high, but just a little higher than where it landed. But, considering how the market was, I think, you know, I had a great, you know, situation, a great deal. I always wanted to be with a contender, a team that can win. A city that I wanted to live in, or a fan base that was great. Philly, one of the best fan bases and media market outlets out there. And, you know, I guess most importantly, I said maximize on the, not most importantly, but maximize on the dollar. The city, maximize on the dollar, and most importantly is the contender. So the contender and be able to win with a group of guys, I think we could do that.
Yeah.
So, but looking at the market, I didn't know if that was set or anticipated before free agency happened, because I don't think anybody predicted. Did you predict that? Did you see it coming or happening the way it did?
No. I mean, there's a lot I didn't see coming, to be honest. I mean, I didn't think that free agency would basically be over on night two. Like, you know, by night three, it was already down to a trickle, right?
It happens fast. But I just think the way it was, we see certain guys get paid quite a bit. A lot of guys are just kind of vet minimums or just no exceptions. So I'm just wondering what your take is on it, especially with certain guys getting the super max now, or some getting $50 million a year, you know, and then, you know, the middle guys or the other guys are getting like, you know, maybe 3 or 4 or vet minimums. Did you see that changing any, or where do you see the league going in terms of that aspect?
It's interesting, Danny, because like I've been covering the league long enough to have gone through two lockouts and a number of CBAs, and without getting too granular and boring the listeners with all the CBA talk, salary cap minutia, this has felt, for the most part, this most recent CBA has felt like it's actually been really great for every class of player, right? The mid-level guys have been getting paid really well. Like, the average salary has done nothing but go up, and the mid-level exception, the various versions of the mid-level exception, are pretty profitable. Like, if a guy on the mid-level is making $8-9 million, you know, that's four times what it was when the mid-level was first created. In a way, it's working fine. I think there's less right now. It felt like this summer in particular, there wasn't as much freedom of movement. So guys like you, maybe you didn't, like, again, you landed in a great spot. You're with one of the best teams in the league. But if you wanted to really explore options, whether it's to build up your value or just, you know, have more leverage, have teams bidding against each other, or because maybe, you know what, who knows? Maybe you might have felt better about one place other than Philly. Your options seem like they were a little more limited than I would have anticipated. And I don't know if that's a momentary thing just 2021. This is where we are. Teams are a little bit tighter on the purse strings because of COVID and all the losses of the last year and a half. The cap and cap room tends to be kind of cyclic. And there were only a few teams that were really clearing cap room for this summer because they were all going to try to chase Giannis. And then they got shut out and they had to pivot. this might just be a blip.
I'm hoping it's just a momentary thing. Because I hate to see certain guys, even though it's a Schroeder, I was traded for him, to see him, you know, have to settle for a mid-level exception because there was no, everything was kind of dried up and there was no money out there really.
Yeah.
Instead of getting certain guys get paid, what was like a sign and trade type of deal. And so many parties have to agree on that. So many, you know what I'm saying? And if the team doesn't want to give you up, it's just hard to make that happen. It's hard for other teams to bid for you. And if you're not one of those guys, then you're pretty much going to be on a vet minimum, it seems like. And if you're a guy that makes multiple decisions, you might end up, you know, doing something like that and then not be able to get back to the market where you deserve to be. But hopefully it's a momentary thing. Hopefully, just like the escrow situation, hopefully that escrow, we start getting that back at some point. Because that hurts quite a bit with the taxes on top of it with escrow. It's just been a rough momentary time that I hope that the league, and it should, bounce back from.
Yeah, I think it will. A lot of these things tend to be cyclic. And if it doesn't bounce back, there's another battle coming in the next CBA, I'm sure. So you've been around this league for a while. I wonder how things change on this front, Danny, when you're a free agent. Here are some factors that I would say like free agents would generally weigh as they're picking their next team. Mm-hmm. There's money is the obvious one. Location, the role you'd play, you know, minutes, shots, all that. Winning. And levels of winning, right? Contender versus a play, mid-level playoff team. The coach, teammates, quality of the organization. And I assume that those things change over the course of a career and over the course of different free agent periods. So here you are at age 34, yes. Correct?
Still feeling young, but getting older.
34, yeah, you're definitely young. By my standards, you're young. 34 years old. And how did those factors that I just ticked off, how did they all, like, what was the pie chart of all those now versus maybe the first time you entered free agency for real in 2010?
That process has changed a lot from then to now. The things that I look at is totally different. Like I said, if it was a big priority for me to win a championship, I might have taken a mid-level exception somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? Not saying that we couldn't do it in Philly, but you know, a lot of guys are like, you know what, let me go to Milwaukee, let me go to Brooklyn. And I know for sure if we stay healthy, you know, that same situation in Philly, the healthiest team is always a team that is and playing the best, of course. But I like being against playing against those teams and trying to beat them. And I said starting is probably a factor when you're younger and playing the most minutes and scoring. Obviously, that is a factor now. It's not as big as a factor. Obviously, I want to play. I want to be an important role. But when you get older, necessarily starting might not be as important. You know, you'll come up bench, be that spark. You know, getting the most minutes, getting the most play calls might not be as important. You kind of put a lot of those things in the back burner and then, you know, pick a system or a place where you still do well, but to where the team can excel with, you know, you as being a piece of that puzzle. Also, you know, city is a factor. I think as you get older, that becomes more a factor. The city that you live in, tax purposes, tax wise, you know, what cities have the highest tax rates, what cities don't, you know, you start leaning toward that as you get older. And also you kind of lean towards what places you might want to end up in when you retire, when you're done playing. So there's a lot of different factors that goes through when you're younger and older. When you're younger, you want to play the most minutes, you want to continue to thrive, you continue to start, you want to get the most money out of it as well. When you're older, when you made your money, you know, the money factor is a factor, but it's not as big as an issue, you know, as it was when you're younger. So you'll take less money to win more. You'll take less of a role to win more. As you're older and you've done those things, you'll take less to try to, you know, attain a championship. And unfortunately for me, it's that I've been able to do it. I've been able to win three times, a couple of times. I've been blessed. So, you know, it's a priority to me to win, and I obviously want to win, but it's not like I have to chase it. I don't have to join up with forces and powers to chase it. You know, I want to try to do it in a different type of standpoint, and from a challenging standpoint, try to beat those teams, beat those, you know, those towers, those powerhouse teams out there. So, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, I stayed where I was at. It's time for Philly, you know, to get a win, you know, and I think, you know, I'm going to help change that.
part of the struggle to break through was they lost you in the middle of that series against Atlanta with it was a calf, right?
Yes, calf strain.
Great. Yeah. Among all the whatever injuries you've had, or just, you know, bad timing, bad circumstances you've had, where does that rank going down in the middle of that series, as close as that series was?
Probably the top, man, because I've fortunately, lucky enough, knock on wood, I've never had any major injuries, really. I've had a broken finger before that was during the season. You know, I've had some stitches here and there. I've had a couple of random, you know, sprains, things like that. I've never been injured in the playoffs. That's the most important time of the year. And at a time where I felt like my team needed me most, and where I felt like we could have actually got over that hump had I been playing. You know, we were up 2-1. And in back-to-back games, up 15-plus points with 18 points and 26 points in the next two games, and then lost those two games. I think I could have helped, you know, hopefully get us at least the Eastern Conference Finals, but I thought we had a good pathway if we stayed healthy. And that apart, me being a part of that, if I stayed healthy, I think we had a really good shot at it. But these are the healthiest teams that are playing the best are the ones that are the last team standing, and that was Milwaukee this year.
So we're at that part of the summer where – everybody's already doing their way too early predictions. And of course, the odds makers have posted all the odds, and everything in the East is all about Milwaukee and Brooklyn. And like, there isn't, occasionally when there's a third team mentioned, it's often been Miami instead of you guys. Like, how cognizant of all that are you and your teammates right now? What do you think it says about how the Sixers are being viewed at the moment?
I think we're enjoying the offseason right now, but very cognizant at the same time. We're not paying attention to too much of it, but we know that a lot of those teams, they are very good. There's a reason why they're at the top of our power rankings, and we're not there. We don't have a Christmas game, you know, things like that. We hadn't had one last year either. Regardless, of those teams deserve, you know, those type of rankings right now, the moves that they've made. But when the season comes, we know that that allows us to play with that chip on our shoulder. We know that we want to, you know, attack those teams, looking forward to those games, those type of atmospheres, those type of matchups, because, you know, those teams. And also, we know that a lot of those teams are getting older as well, and that they don't always stay healthy. So we didn't get a chance to even play Brooklyn at a full health during the year. Miami, they might not have been full healthy, but now they have a totally different team. But so the issue, or not the issue, but the big factor of those teams excelling or being where they are is staying healthy and staying, I guess, not staying younger, but you know, the age takes a factor into it. As you're older, it's harder to recover from health, recover from, now we're going back to 82 games. What guys are going to play how many games, and can they last through? Is it going to be too much for their bodies? There's a lot of things to factor in that. So I'm looking forward to the matchups of playing those teams. Hopefully they're at 100% health, but I'm not saying that we're predicting or assuming that they're not going to be 100% healthy, but we know there's going to be some teams there that are going to take a hit. And, you know, we're trying to be one of those teams with the best medical staff and stay on top of it, so we're not in that situation again next year in the playoffs.
Yeah. That Nets team, you know, we never really saw that. We barely saw them at full strength. And mm-hmm. So much of this is just about the belief in, okay, these are three absolutely elite all-time scorers. And so it's just kind of an assumption. Chemistry is kind of funny, though, and obviously injury luck can play a factor, as it did for them last season. I don't know what to make of them, but it does, like, we do this thing where it's everything at this time of year just on paper. On paper, they look like they could be unbeatable. Mm-hmm. Look, you're a guy who's made your living in large part on defense, and especially wing defense, so these are all guys you have to deal with, all three of those players.
Yeah.
So what is the opponent's standpoint when Harden first lands there, and then even in an offseason like this where you guys want to get back in that mix, but you know there is this potentially historic offensive powerhouse there in Brooklyn?
I think the first reaction is, hell yeah, we get to play against those guys. You know, it's going to be a lot of fun. And the second reaction is like, damn, they have a lot of guys. How are we going to guard all three of them? You know, how are we going to match up with all three? It's going to be tough. I think we can do it. We take on the challenge, but it's going to be a nightmare. Even when we did play them at not 100% health, it's like, yo, these guys are pretty damn good. But, you know, we had a lot of fun. So when guys like that land where they land, my mindset initially goes to, you know, the competitive side. And, you know, I can't wait to play against them and see how well we do. But when it comes to, like, actually breaking down film and matchups and defensively and seeing how we're going to cover, it's like, man, this could be a nightmare. But, you know, it's a fun nightmare. It's a fun atmosphere to be in, a fun position to be in. But, like you said, I don't know the second part of your question, but I think, you know, when we see those guys go to certain places, we look forward to playing them at 100% health.
All right, how about this? For the first time you play them this coming season, and all three of them are presumably out there, which is the guy you least want Doc assigning to you right out of the gate?
Oh, I mean, so I'd love to take on the challenge, but I just think it's harder to figure out, you know, who's going to guard that third, because we usually have it's me, Ben, and Matisse is our third defensive guy, but he comes off the bench. So it's like, do we start him? Do we figure out, do we go small? How do we do this? I figure out who can I guard better than the other. Obviously, Kyrie, James are all tough. KD's the hardest guy to guard in the world. But who can I, fountain or contain? James is probably going to play more point guard, probably a little more passive. So we might be able to put, not saying less of a defender on him, but we might be able to play a guy that can just hone in on, playing some point guard type position. Kyrie's going to be aggressive. We need a guy that's ready to go all day. So is KD. Got to be ready to go, taller, bigger guard. So it's, with those three guys at 100% health, it's tough. Mind you, I think the biggest key was didn't they lose Jeff Green? Didn't he end up going somewhere else?
They did lose Jeff Green, yeah. But they got back Blake Griffin. They signed your old Spurs pal, Patty Mills.
This is going to be a key. Losing Jeff hurt them, but bringing Patty helped them. But I think Jeff was the X factor for them, which Patty's going to have to try to be, but he's at a smaller guard, smaller position. Jeff being able to play, two through guard guys, two through five, basically playing the five for them was big. And bringing back Bruce Brown was good, big for them too. So I said those matchups, those type of chess matches is what, we kind of live for, we not just the physical part of it and getting up and down, but the chess match of figuring out how to guard certain people is part of the game that I love.
So as we sit here in late August, discussing all this, and training camps are about a month away, there's obviously like the one big, and this is the elephant in the room in this whole discussion of contention in the East and everything else. We don't know the future of Ben Simmons. And, look, you decide to re-sign with this team that's built around two stars. One of those stars, we don't really know what's going to happen, if he's going to be traded by opening night or maybe, later than that at some point. Again, how closely are you paying attention to it? I assume this is at least some subject of conversation as you and your teammates are texting each other in the summer.
Yes, I've texted him here and there. Mostly we just wish each other happy birthday, enjoy the offseason. When I see him, we're in the same city, we chop it up some. But I was just working out with one of our coaches here, and we were just talking about what's going on with his hurt, what they've heard. We don't hear from the higher-ups. We don't get that type of intel, or they don't consult with us before they make moves. We're hearing who we might get, who we might lose. And we're all very interested in paying very close attention to it. And then as rough of a end that he had, which I don't think it was rough to media wise. I think he still played great defensively, rebounded the ball well and did his job. And I wasn't out there to help, but as rough as it was for him, probably mentally, emotionally, and for the city and for people bashing him, he's still a very good player and we need him. We need him to excel. I need him to excel. So that's going to be a big part of how, I'm able to play within the system, how we operate within the system, because he produces a lot of transition, he produces a lot of open threes, and that's kind of what I do. And he's also a great defender. So, we need him, and we're trying to just get on board and get everything, in the past, leave it in the past and move forward with the next season. But we don't know, where that's at with the organization or where he's at with it. We talk here and there, try to time in and text in and check in with him. But for the most part, I'm going with the mindset that he's going to be with us and that we need him. And you're just trying to get him on board. That's just the mentality I have. And hopefully he has the same one.
If he's not there, what changes for you? I mean, everybody looks at it through their own prism of okay, my role on the team and who I play off of and who I've got a good vibe with, good chemistry with, whatever. If Ben Simmons is somewhere else on opening night, which in my, you don't have to agree, but in my mind, I think it's inevitable. I think it's almost a given, because I just think it's going to be really tough to keep him after all that's happened, all that's been discussed, all that's been in the media. So what changes for Danny Green to not have Ben Simmons as the guy orchestrating out there and pushing it on the break and everything, breaking down defense and getting you open threes?
That's going to be tough to say, man, because we don't know where we're going to get back from. You may get a point guard, we may get wings. That may change a lot. I might be playing with a different type of point guard. I might be playing with different type of wings. I might be coming off the bench. I don't know who we're going to get. So it could change a lot. And also defensively, I probably become the primary defender. I'm not saying it's an issue or a problem for me, but we have one less wing of a defender with him. Now it's me and Matisse. I'm not saying other guys don't play defense, but you talk about our main defenders. Ben was a big part of that and a big part of our defense. Obviously, Tobias has kicked it up notch and been amazing defensively for us. But Ben was, DPOY for us this year. And my vote, everybody voting our team, of course, we thought he deservingly so should have been defensive player of the year. No disrespect to, Rudy Gobert. He had a great year always, every last 3 years. But we thought Ben was able to guard 1 through 5 and set the tone for us. And he's gone. So that changes a lot for not just offensively, but defensively as well for me. It depends on what we get back in return.
Danny, you mentioned just how difficult it was for Ben, just the backlash, the criticism, how loud that was fans, media, everyone. I mean, people are still talking about him passing up that dunk in Game 7. Look, you're a respected vet. You are one of the old heads now, for lack of a better term. You've got three rings. You played for a lot of great teams and some great coaches. I assume you have more of a, you know, we think about, people often associate stars with leaders. There are a lot of stars who are kind of quiet dudes. They're like, leadership doesn't come naturally to them necessarily. And then there are guys like you who might be what we would call role players, respectfully, of course, but who, because of your understanding of the game and your experience, your accomplishments with teams you've been with, you have a little bit more of that gravitas. So have you felt that over the course of the last few years as you've gained, you know, that kind of standing? And, how, you know, does that put you in a position to be advising Ben Simmons, whether it's talking to him off the proverbial ledge about what, you know, the backlash, or just about his shot not shooting, all that? I mean, without telling us what you've told him, what's been your approach there?
Probably my biggest role on this team. Obviously on the court perform, but off the court even bigger, just being that voice of the locker room. We lost George Hill. We lost Dwight Howard. I'm the only person above 30 on the team right now. And not of many other veterans, obviously Tobias, but, you know, talking Ben through it, talking Joel through it, Tobias as well, being the veteran and teaching our young guys. We are young guys a year more mature, but they're still learning. So, yeah, that's going to be a big factor in how I approach things and how I talk to these guys, especially our superstars and said our young guys as well. But that role is very – that's what the role I had last year, and trying to do that, and hopefully I get better at it, and hopefully they make it easier, and hopefully they catch on faster. But, you know, that's a big part of the reason why they wanted me back there, and they needed me, especially during those games. It wasn't just the on-court stuff, but the leadership role and the poise, the maturity that I brought to the table for the team is what was needed during that playoff series.
Is there one thing that one of the old heads told you early on, whether in Cleveland or San Antonio, that stuck with you most, that you find is the thing that you're repeating the most now?
There's a lot of things, man. There's so many things I've learned from a lot of guys. Obviously in LA, there's so many vets there. But my first year in Cleveland, I learned a lot too. It was a lot of vets with, you know, Bron, Shaq, of course, but Anthony Parker, who was an amazing, you know, role model, ultimate professional. And I had a lot of those guys. You know, it was Jonas Jagauskas and San Antonio, of course, Timmy Tonimano, some of the best people you can ever, you know, look after or follow suit. You know, these guys are ultimate professionals. So learning from them and just seeing how they operate, not even, you don't have to, they don't have to say much, but just watching how they, you know, moved around outside of the court, on the court, and through practice, in the weight room, how they carry themselves after a tough loss, after a tough or a very fought win or an easy win, just how they didn't get too caught up in that moment at the time during the season, and then, you know, just looking at the bigger picture and you know, preparing for that moment. And when the bigger picture, that big moment came, you know, how they operated, how they led, how they, you know, by actions and words, how vocal they were. So those small things I've learned from everybody, you know, the list goes on. I've been lucky. I've played for a lot of teams. I've played with a lot of great guys. And I've learned so many from a lot of my old heads of how to be professional and how to be ready for that moment and you know, keep your poise and maturity. And also just, you know, keep that calmness for especially those younger guys and making sure that they're enjoying the moment and not get too flustered, but having fun with it. At the end of the day, that's what we're here for. This is what we dreamed of as little kids, you know, to be in these moments and play on these stages. So we might as well have fun with it.
I'd kind of forgotten that your time in Cleveland overlapped with that part of Shaq's career. You could not have possibly escaped Cleveland without one great Shaq encounter or Shaq story. So what do you got?
I have a bunch of Shaq stories, man. Not all of them are great, but, you know, I was the only rookie. I had to get all the donuts, and I was pretty much the team assistant. I'd have to carry a lot of Shaq shoes, carry, you know, ice coolers, Guitar Heroes back then. There was a bunch of stuff. And Shaq pretty much had me, you know, Shaq was in a fraternity. He had me pledging pretty much. And I had to greet them a certain way. I had to learn a step. You know, he did certain punishments. Back then, it was considered rookie hazing or anything like that. But as a rookie, I took it in great stride. But, you know, Shaq had a lot of, you know, funny things about him that I won't share publicly. He shared himself. But, you know, it wasn't as easy. It wasn't easy being his rookie. But, you know, I had a lot of fun. I learned a lot from him. But, you know, he was a good vet.
Does rookie hazing still happen, or is that kind of faded out of fashion with this younger generation?
It's crazy because in Philly, I was like, I didn't realize to the end of the year. I'm like, wait, rookies don't get donuts? I didn't realize we weren't getting donuts the whole year. And because I guess the guys, like I guess Ben and Joel, they never really had to get donuts. They didn't have many vets that made them get donuts. So the rookies started getting donuts like the last week of the season and then into the playoffs. They didn't know they had to get donuts. They didn't really, I guess, make them or force them to do any type of rookie duty. So it's pretty much non-existent at this point.
So like no like goofy backpacks, no like walking around in strange clothes. Well, everybody's wearing odd stuff off the rack these days anyway.
I didn't see any of that. But, you know, this year I'll be more, I'm going to say enforce them, but we will have our rookie guys to do something, you know, but they had it easy. You know, they had to carry, they carried some stuff here and there, but it's COVID, it's spaced out. Things were focused on just getting back to normal. Nobody really thought about donuts or rookie hazing. before that, even before COVID, I think, you know, the rookie hazing had gone down tremendously.
Generation Z, man, they can't stand the rookie hazing. It's not for them.
It's a different world, man. It's a softer generation, man.
So, I mean, you mentioned something important here, though. Like, you joined Philly. You changed teams in the middle of a pandemic. I changed jobs in the middle of a pandemic, too. I started Sports Illustrated back in December. So it's strange. Like, I haven't been to our offices yet. I haven't met our editors yet. Still.
People I have not met in our offices.
And you probably didn't get to explore Philly quite as much either. So are you looking forward to a more open version of you know, year two in Philly where you can actually, like, explore a little bit? Like, what are you looking forward to?
Very much so, man. That's the biggest thing that I'm looking forward to, is being out and being in the community, learning Philly. Obviously, the history, the museums, the people, but doing, you know, Christmas, Thanksgiving drives, that type of thing, and having our fans there for the whole year, not just the end of the year, but having our fans there the whole year. But so, learning more Philly, being able to explore. I've been in the league for quite some time now. I don't think I've ever been out in Philly. I've experienced some of the restaurants, but I've never experienced a night out in Philly. So experiencing that, but experiencing just a lot of things that the city has to offer. So that's the biggest thing I'm looking forward to coming back.
Yeah. And it's a great city to get to explore too, for sure. One thing that the pandemic did not knock out was Inside the Green Room, your podcast. You mentioned Harrison Sanford earlier in the pod, your co-host. You guys have moved this to TV the last couple of years. Several episodes in LA where you were on Spectrum Sportsnet. You got to be on NBC Sports in Philly. So you're branching out, you're building your media empire, getting your TV reps.
Big shout out to Harrison. Big shout out to Amjad Osman. That's our producer. Those guys do all the great, you know, the brains behind the operation. They've set us up in a great position. And you know, Philly's treated us greatly. The media outlets treated us greatly. So we had a show now on TV, which is great. Hopefully we can continue and extend that and pursue that and push that. But it's been a wonderful avenue to be able to learn about the city, learn about my teammates, learn about myself in that situation. Give Philly a full insight in who I am. So, hopefully we can keep that going. And shout out to Harrison and Sanford and Amjad Osman. Those guys are the brains behind everything, and they make everything, you know, magical. They make all the magic happen.
Where do you want it to go from here, Danny? I mean, you've probably got at least one more contract in you, maybe a couple.
I hope so. As long as I can. But I'm using these reps, man. Hopefully do what you do, and hopefully maybe do, you know, when I'm done TV or sideline or, you know, commentate or analyst. You know, I know some of those guys on the panel are getting older, you know, Chuck, Shaq, Kenny, and Ernie. Maybe I'll be up there one of those days. You never know. That's something I would love to get into. I would love to be the Tony Romo of the NBA. Just jump right into a great job of doing TV. That's the goal.
Draymond is definitely the next Chuck. Like, I think we can all pencil that in. Assuming the TNT can snag him.
I give him more credit than Chuck. But yes, he is the So I give him more credit to Chuck.
Shots fired.
Not only shots to Chuck, but Chuck's his guarantees and his predictions. I think Draymond might have some better predictions.
Well, that's a low bar. Chuck's prediction rate is pretty poor. Worse than his golf swing, I think. But no, like, Draymond's a natural, but like you'd be like, I think it would slot you in as Kenny's spot, right? That makes sense.
I would love to work with Kenny, but yeah, Kenny's the ultimate Tar Heel, ultimate professional, and he's, you know, carried on the name and said that the school colors better than anyone. So he's, you know, just a great person I've looked up to and watched and tried to idolize and try to emulate over my course of my career, because he's not only done it in basketball but outside of basketball, and there's a reason why he should be in the Hall. So many reasons why he should be in the Hall of Fame. I think he's got a Hall of Fame media ring. I don't know. It looked kind of awesome. But shout out to Kenny Smith. Shout out to all the guys. Stuart Scott, another one of my inspirations. May he rest in peace. Was the reason why, you know, I studied in communication in college and tried to get into that field. So.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's very cool. So lost my train of thought. Shelby, you can creatively edit this part. I was gonna ask you. You've been in the podcast space for a bit now. It's been a few years. And a lot of active players are doing this now, right? J.J. Redick's got his podcast. C.J. McCollum's got his. Are you listening to the other players' podcasts? Are you guys cribbing notes a little bit from each other on how you're doing it? Is there somebody else's that you like a lot? Or are you trying? How do you – and also, how do you kind of make your own – unique, because the space is getting crowded. Like, I think about this all the time myself. There's a gazillion media guys like me doing some version of an NBA podcast, whether it's punditry, interviews, whatever, and standing out in a crowded marketplace is tough. So how have you guys viewed that?
It is tough, man. So it's harder and harder to be more unique because so many people, so many platforms have done so many different things. I do listen to other people's podcasts. I love them all. I like what they're doing. Obviously, we try to be different. Jed and Harry are the ones that kind of critique or decipher and write down notes of what they like, what we want to do, and what things we want to do differently. And I just, you know, try to, we all have creative mind of what could be different. Obviously, from a different standpoint, you know, me, JJ, CJ are all still playing. You know, you look at Steven Jackson, Matt Barnes, they're not playing anymore, so they have a different type of way they can operate. And you try to be, you know, like them, similar to, you know, be able to relate to the fans in a realistic type of way, but you still, at the same time, you have a job that you can't really be, I'd say 100% genuine. You can't be as raw as Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes.
But, you also, know, you can't smoke weed on camera.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's not. You know, it's fun though. It's funny to watch them. It's fun to see what, you know, guess the stories they get from those people. They get the real raw stuff. It's amazing. You try to do the same thing within a different type of realm or a different type of atmosphere with, you know, some of your teammates. And obviously, you don't want to step on anybody's shoes or mention any names when it comes to bad news. You don't want to mention any good news before, you know, it's supposed to be out there. So there's a lot of rules and guidelines you have to follow. But, yeah, I take bits and pieces of each one of them. I enjoy each and every one. I support each and every one of them. Those guys are great. They're amazing at what they do. You said we try to do things differently, be creative. I try to be on their podcast and have them on mine as well. But I try to, you know, be a mix of all of them. But be ourselves and have my own thing. And try to be creative in things that I like to do. And hopefully, you know, the viewership of the fans, they love it as well.
And once you retire, whenever that day comes and you've got your podcast, then you're just letting loose, right? Like, there's no holds barred. You could be like, Stack and Matt.
You'd be right there with Stack and Matt. Just doing the shit, talking. I mean, not smoking because I don't smoke, but, you know, we'll be talking. They probably mention some names. We'll probably throw some people, who knows, throw some people on the bus to talk some. You know, I'm not going to cuss, but we can talk some ish here and there. Just, you know, have some fun times and have some guys on there when they're done playing of what really happened during that time, what they liked, what they just didn't like. You know, I think it's easy, not easier, but it's fun or more interesting to see guys looking back at what really happened in certain situations. The fans get the insight of, oh, man, what happened during that time? Or this really happened? What was going through your mind? So it's not saying it's easier to tell a story, but it's more interesting to, I think, the viewers to hear the story some years later.
Yeah, no, there's two thoughts I have on that. One is that the best stories that you guys have as players almost always come after you've retired and, like, you don't have to worry about which organization you might piss off, which coach, right? So there's that. The other observation is just that, and Matt and Stack do, like, it's just a phenomenal job with their podcast in particular. I mean, a lot of guys do, and JJ does as well. But that when players are talking to other players or players are talking to retired players, in the case of Stack and Matt, it's different than when they're sitting in a room with me, where partially there's a bigger age gap. I didn't play in the league. It's different. And I do think, like, there's a higher comfort level. And I think some more stuff kind of spills out in that environment.
So it's kind of like, you know, Bron with the barbershop. It's like a locker room type atmosphere. They feel like they're still in the locker room sharing information, sharing with each other. Not saying that we couldn't feel that vibe with you. But I just said they feel a little more comfortable with guys they probably played with. They probably, you know, talking about their perspective and when they played together, when they played against each other. But it's kind of like locker room talk or barbershop talk. And it's easier, I guess, to kind of have those stories flow when you've been with those people during those times.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Well, I look forward to whatever the next big evolution is for Inside the Green Room. Look forward to seeing what you and the Sixers do on the court. I look forward to seeing what the Sixers are actually going to look like on opening night, because I'm really not sure at this stage. Danny, this has been great. Congrats again on the marriage, and good luck with the babies.
Thank you, man. Good luck to you, man. I appreciate everything.
Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Danny Green. Thanks and a shout out to Harrison Sanford, Danny's co-host on Inside the Green Room, for helping connect us. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston. And thank you all, as always, for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you can. get your podcasts. Go subscribe to the Sports Illustrated Podcast channel on YouTube and hit me with all your feedback on Twitter @HowardBeck.